Hey folks, before we start this week's episode, we gotta tell you about this special event coming up June 20th at 9 p.m. at Naked City Brewery and Tap House in beautiful Seattle, Washington. That's right, Air Raid Live number 2, featuring comedian Alicia Sanchez, Mikey and Maddie, and Pickwick, man. It's gonna be so much fun. We had a great time last year, it sold out super quick, so get on it. Go to brownpapertickets.com, type Air Raid Live into the search bar, and you should find it right there. Or you can visit www.air-raid.net, click on this episode's blog, and find the link. Buy your tickets. They're $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode number 250 in what has now officially become a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Happy Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day, indeed. And for those of you that made it out to Sasquatch, we hope you all had a great time. We've got a ton of voicemails from friends of the show, friends of this here podcast, that called in because, okay, hold on. Back up. Back the train up just a second. I was unable to go to Sasquatch this weekend. I know. I said I was going. Everything was looking good for me this weekend, and then I realized that it is my 8th wedding anniversary. Yeah, cue sad horns right there. Realized it was my 8th wedding anniversary about 2 weeks prior to getting ready to go to Sasquatch and enjoy the festivities over there. Looked my wife in the eye, my beautiful, lovely, loving wife, Mairead, in the eye, and could tell that, you know, maybe it was better to stay home and spend an evening with my wife, celebrating our 8 years of union, right? Yeah, probably a good thing, I think. No, here's the deal. So, Mairead was fine with me going to Sasquatch, but we have not had a moment away, a full night away from the kids in a year. We haven't had it since our baby Tegan was born, and so we decided, maybe we'll put off Sasquatch another year. We'll go next year, but this time around, we both need a night off of quiet and solitude and togetherness away from the kids. So that's what we did. We went up to the lake cabin and just had a great night of just watching movies. We saw Mad Max and then ate steak and shrimp and watched another movie called 50 Shades of Grey. I don't know if you've heard of it, and it was awful. It was hilarious. The amount of innuendo that is in that movie just within like the first 30 minutes of that movie is absolutely so funny. It's like Room quality. You know the movie The Room? It's like that kind of quality. The dialogue in that movie is just ridiculous. Anyway, I think Mad Max has beat out that movie for the amount of bondage that's featured in it, which is a super funny tweet that I wrote the other day that only got one favorite, guys. Only got one favorite. You can follow me on Twitter, at AirRaidNet, if you want those gems. So that's what we did. Now, my FOMO, I know I've talked about this before, but I have a huge, huge anxiety about fear of missing out, right? And it was made even worse by the amount of voicemails that we got from people at Sasquatch, friends of the show at Sasquatch, saying, "Where the hell are you?" and this was great. It was super fun. We of course solicited getting these voicemails. It's not that people just did it out of like I'm not the most popular person on the planet. Okay, I don't want to make it sound like these people just did it out of their own free will. I had the idea of having them call in, and they did. In a little bit, we're going to get to our episode. We're going to be talking with Kim Holcomb this week. If you do not live around the Seattle area, then you probably don't know who Kim is. But if you do, she is just a fantastic human being that is on this show called Evening, used to be Evening Magazine. And she interviews a lot of stars and people in the entertainment industry for this nightly show. It's every weekday, 7:30 p.m. on King 5. She used to work in the news, and now she does this kind of like entertainment nightly show here in the Northwest. That is it's a great show, and I wanted to talk to her after I had that experience with Brett Morgan doing my first press junket. I wanted to talk to Kim about how she got into this whole deal, because she does a lot of these press junkets. And if you listen to TBTL, you've probably heard Kim on that show. But we wanted to have her over here and kind of get her spin on doing press junkets and stuff. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, I want to get to these voicemails. This is going to be a longer show because we've got just a ton of stuff to get to. So this first voicemail from friends of the show, Brian Schumann and Larry. I met these guys 3 years ago back at Sasquatch, or maybe it was even four. I can't remember now, but great dudes that I met at Sasquatch, friends of Adam Zaks, who of course has been on this show before as well. Larry from Chicago, Brian from New York, and we just really hit it off, and man, I was so disappointed that I couldn't see these guys. So let's get this going, shall we? Boy, I am just off of it. This is a voicemail from a friend of the show, Brian.
Schumann, I met you at Sasquatch 3 years ago, which means that this weekend is our anniversary, which you admit. And I thought you were going to be here. I listened to your podcast. I thought maybe I might be on your podcast one day, but no, because you're out of here because somehow or another something else came up. And you know, like, it's upsetting because I would like to share this experience with you, but at the same time, it's hard to say I've spent very long because there's really a lot of good shit going on here, man. There's some major stuff. Right now is Jose Gonzalez, and he's fantastic. But never mind. See you later.
Brian Schumann, everybody. He wanted to be on the podcast. There you go, Brian. You're on the podcast, right? I mean, that counts as a voicemail? Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's keep on moving. Get this. Oh, my God. Let's see. This is from Chris Mintz-Plasse. Yeah, that guy played McLovin in the movie Superbad. He's in a band called Bear on Fire, and we're working on getting him on the show. But he decided to call in as well and give us his two cents.
Hey, this is Chris from Bear on Fire, and you missed out on the Sasquatch cheek kisses.
Well, that was a quick one. Cheek kisses. Hey, thanks, Chris. Thanks for the appreciate that. Okay. Let's see. What do we got? Oh, my God. Okay. All right. It's going to be a long one. Troy Nelson from the Young Evils decided to call in and tell us what we missed out, or what I missed out on. Man, I'll tell you what, I'm FOMOing hard here. I'm really FOMOing hard. Does that even make sense?
Aaron, what's up? This is Troy from the Young Evils. Out at the Sasquatch Festival, and you're not here. I don't understand why you're not here. Why is it? Because you have a child? Because you have to stay home and be responsible? I mean, I'm backstage right now. Lana Del Rey just kissed me on the lip. St. Vincent just blew people's minds. I just saw her walk by. Oh, there she goes. Annie Clark. Okay. Okay, yeah, I'll talk to you later. See, I just talked to her. Tame Impala is going to be playing. We partied with them so hard that we were shooting Jack Daniels into our eyeballs. I mean, what the fuck, man? You're missing out. Here, Mackenzie's going to tell you exactly what you're missing out on here at the Sasquatch Festival. You boring piece of shit.
Oh, my God, I'm eating, though. Is he here, Aaron? Oh. JK. Hey, little butt crack, butt crack, butt crack, what you gonna do? Hey, little butt crack, 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 I think you passed it too. We missed you. It'd be so much more fun if you were here. But you have little babies, and they're playing guitars now, and they're really cute. And you and your wife, kudos, because you made really attractive babies.
Thank you, Mackenzie.
And Troy is drinking all the painkillers. I'm shoving my face with food. He's lying. He wishes so hard. But we're going to go watch her next. And who needs to say hi? Michael? Michael's going to say hi. Love you, long time. Let's come on your radio show. Look at me.
Hey.
We're gonna stop it right there. This one is super, super long. We need to get still roll it here. Troy and Mackenzie of the Young Evils and Michael for just a split second. Okay, let's go. Let's go with the next one here. Aaron Tate. Of course, you remember Aaron Tate. Let's see, former member or former drummer for the band Minus the Bear. Great dude, now runs things over at Phone Home Management, and let's see what Aaron has to say. God, I am like I'm so bummed. I'm missing out on all of this. Oh my God, let's get Aaron Tate.
Hi, Aaron and Air Raid. This is Aaron Tate from Phone Home Management. Since you couldn't make it to the Sasquatch 2015. Because of your 8th wedding anniversary, I'm going to leave you 8 reasons why you suck shit. 1.
Hold on. Ouch. Ouch. That hurts. That hurts me.
You missed Slowbird. 2. You missed Bear on Fire. 3. You missed getting this brutal suntan that I now have. Sunburn that I now have that is going to turn into a gorgeous tan here pretty quick. 4. You missed being at the Gorge. 5. You're a total prick. 6.
He's right. By the way, I just have to jump in. He's right about that one.
Open bar, dude. 7. There's probably some kids that were really wigging out from acid and stuff that we're making fun of, and it was totally fun. And then 8, and, you know, furthermore, I mean, love is dead, bro. Wedding anniversary? Give me a break. All right. Hope you're well.
These are fantastic. Oh, my God. And I just have to say, these are, like, the first time that I've listened to these. So our good bud, Jay Cox, runner of things over at do206.com. By the way, if you haven't checked out that website yet, you should. If you live in the 206 area code, it's a calendar where you can find all of the stuff that's going on. Movies, plays, everything in the arts. Shows, music, everything, man, that's going on in the city. It's all right there at do206.com. So go and check that out. This is Jay Cox, runner of things, like I said. Calling in. Oh, man, I hope he's nice to me. I hope he's nice.
Hey, it's your friends from Do206 calling from the Sasquatch Music Festival. It's pretty awesome. You made the wrong decision, Aaron, by not coming. I'm sorry. I know you have responsibilities. But it's amazing. Last night, Father John Misty burned down a stage to ashes, left nothing for Spoon to perform on. And today, St. Vincent took that stage, rebuilt it, and then burned it down even more. Amazing. There's some sort of Father John Misty, St. Vincent presidential ticket for 2016. I put my vote there. I guess what else did he miss? Jenny Lewis made everyone very happy with her amazing set. Yep, she played that. What else? Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live. Whoa, holy fucking shit, motherfucker. Was that a dirty set? Amazing. She got in the crowd. She pulled a bunch of joints out of people's hands. Put her in the mouth, smoked it, and the hands on back. So fucking amazingly fucking filthy dirty. Crowd work. And then a bunch of other bands played. And then tonight Robert Plant is going to play. Hopefully he does some Led Zeppelin songs. That would be amazing. Modest Mouse played Dramamine. That was amazing. It was awesome. They had lasers. We're going to go stalk Robert Plant now. Our next call may be for you to bail us out of jail. We love you, Aaron. Your friends from Do 206.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Oh, thank you so much to everybody who called in and left little messages for us. We really, really appreciate it. And my FOMO is really, it's on like, how do you say that? It's like, it's in the red right now, you guys. It's in the red. Okay. That's the expression I'll use there. Okay. Let's get into it, shall we? Let's go with our first musical break. Hey, remember, before we do that, June 20th, tickets are going quick, man. We're already half sold out. We're over half sold out for the June 20th live taping of the Air Raid podcast with Michael and Galen of Pickwick, Mikey and Maddie, and comedy by Alicia Sanchez. It's going to be great. It's right there here in Seattle, north on the north end in Greenwood at Naked City Brewery. Go to brownpapertickets.com or click, go to our website, air-raid.net, and click the link in this here show blog. Okay? All right, so let's get into it. Let's play something from a band that was playing at Sasquatch this weekend. That's maybe, you know, that's what we'll feature throughout the episode. This is Cataldo. And yeah, I know I've probably played Cataldo like a billion times on this show, but I'm going to keep on doing it, man, because they're amazing. This is called In Now and Then, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Kim Holcomb of the show Evening. They're on King 5. Okay. Be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Say on the street or on the bus. It's not a struggle to trust her. You're swinging provenance unknown. And the most that you can offer is a beating now and then. Across the trees, Rebecca, Rebecca, and every charming thing now. So if you're looking for the beast, if you ever want to suffer, should be in.
like I've noticed that I'm constantly like creeping the level up on my headphones over the years.
This could also just be age.
I don't like to think of it in that.
You know, nor do I. As I'm seriously, when I'm trying to read something on my iPhone now, I'm like doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
When did that happen?
Oh my God. We just got computers in my work truck at my day job.
Yeah.
And that's literally what I'm doing is like squinting and like, you know, pulling my glasses forward on my nose.
Yeah. I had a eye doctor appointment a couple of weeks ago where they used the word bifocals.
And they said, you're dying.
They said, prior to you dying, you will have to wear these super dorky glasses. So both. You will get bifocals and you're dying.
Bifocals. Yeah, that's what they said. Great. Oh my God.
Old person.
Kim Holcomb of Evening Magazine. Is it still Evening Magazine or is it just Evening now?
It's just Evening now, which has been a challenge to
everybody that's
everyone,
lived in this area for
any length of time.
25 years.
Including those of us on it.
Right.
Yeah, to get used to saying, I'm with Evening Evening.
Evening thing on the television.
But if you think about it, magazine is sort of an antiquated notion at this point, sadly, in many ways. So I think that was part of the thinking behind it was, let's update. We've updated the show a lot.
Right.
So let's update the name of it.
You just call it Eve Mag because everybody's like, you know, it's condensing everything. Right.
Totes.
And then it'll be 5 minutes long.
Totes Eve Mag.
Eve Mag.
Sesh.
That's right. That's right. So one of the reasons I thought about having you on this show, first of all,
everybody else canceled.
No.
Oh.
Because, first of all, I really like you, and I've always enjoyed chatting with you whenever we are in the same room.
Same.
And second of all, I saw you at the Montage of Heck interviewing Brett Morgan, the director, out in kind of the middle of this space.
Yeah.
Right? And so I was super excited that I got to interview this guy, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you listened to my show at all, but it was kind of a trying experience for me.
Why?
Well, I'm not really, because I didn't realize it was going to be like a press junket.
Oh.
And I had never done one before.
Yeah.
Luckily, it wasn't like, you know, you go into a room, there's just like a line of people that go into a room, you get, you know, 10 minutes, whatever they give
you. Ooh, 10 minutes would be a lifetime.
Well, see, they gave me 30.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
That's a lot.
That's pretty good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's really good.
But he had been doing it since, you know, 6 a.m. or something like that. It was just like, I was like, oh my God. You know, and he was a bit prickly.
Was he?
Prickly when I talked to him. So I wanted to talk to you about, like, you know, that stuff that you do.
Okay.
Because I imagine that you do have some stories,
you know,
along the lines of like press junkets and things like that.
I will say I have not had a nightmarish experience, which is great because I've done a few now. And for the most part, everyone has been at least good.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people have been great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get like 4 minutes. And there is someone sitting next to the person that you're interviewing with a stopwatch timing you and giving you cues off to the side while you're trying to make some sort of human connection with this person.
That's so stressful.
It can be stressful, but you know what I have learned? It's sort of like, you know how Twitter helps you become efficient with language? That if you can get
it's made me worse, but okay.
I think if you can tell a funny joke in 140 characters, if you can learn how to do that, it sort of can be beneficial in real life.
Yeah.
I would say that the same can be true of having 4 minutes to interview someone because you have to figure out how can I make that connection with that person in a way that will be meaningful enough for both of us where maybe we can just talk for 4 minutes versus me ask them questions and them know that they have talking points and hit those talking points and give me pad answers.
Right.
So that's been kind of great is to figure out, because sometimes you can be interviewing someone for 4 minutes and that can feel like a lifetime. Those are the not good interviews. But if you can get a good interview in 4 minutes, it can actually be efficient for you too, because then when you have to go back and put the story together, it's a lot easier to log 4 minutes of tape versus half an hour like you did with Brett Morgan.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And it really is kind of a crazy thing that happens though. I mean,
how did it work with you? Were there other people before and after you?
I believe I was like one of the last ones of the day.
Okay.
I was only his, there were only two in-persons that he did that day. The rest of them were over the phone.
Okay.
And so it did, it went fine, but it was like, I had like, you know, I studied.
Sure.
The night before, and I had all these, you know, we were at the movie the night before and everything. And like had all these questions like written up. And like I said in the episode, I was like, oh my God, dude, I am going to kill this. Like, I was like, these questions are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he is going to be like, whoa, you are the best.
Yeah.
You know, let's be best friends after this interview. And so I get there, and he was on the phone with the New York Times and basically answering each question that I had written down.
Oh, that is the worst.
Damn it. Yeah.
They The thing is, though, here's what I will say, because I face that every time that I go to do these interviews. Mm-hmm. You know, there are literally dozens of other people there ask them questions.
Right.
There are certain questions that everyone is going to ask in some way, shape, or form, because we have to, because we are reporting for our affiliates or whoever we're there to represent. Some people are doing websites, whatever. You need to hear them say that to your face. You don't want to just quote some other affiliate.
Yeah.
And so the actors or the directors or the creators, whoever it is that you're talking to, they know that. And that's sort of part of their job. I will sometimes still apologize if I know I'm asking a question that is, it's like the 40th time they've heard
that. Well, that's exactly what I did with Mr.
And
Morgan.
And I think that's great. That's honest at least.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Totally. Well, at one point too, it was great. And this is we'll just stick on this just for a couple more minutes because I got to tell you about this. But at one point I closed the book and he looked at me and he goes, you realize I've been doing this for 12 hours? And at that point, it was like, change of pace.
Yeah.
Good conversation.
Yes.
From that point on.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, he teared up a little bit. He hadn't seen his kids in like a month, you know, and it was like, it got real.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when it got good. But
and then you guys did become best friends.
Yeah.
And lived happily ever after.
And now he will not stop calling. But it was an interesting experience, and I think I probably won't do it ever again.
Why?
It was so nerve-wracking.
Well, it's just like anything, though. The more you do it, the less nerve-wracking. Unless it's someone that you completely are obsessed with, which I still get nervous with certain interviews.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Like, because you interview like big name stars.
You know what's funny? Those
celebs.
Those are not the biggest names that I've interviewed. Uh-huh. Are not the ones that I get the most nervous about. About, weirdly.
Here, let me ask you this,
because
this is the one that I get most nervous about.
Okay.
People that I deem highly intellectual.
Yes, because I don't want to be that stupid person that chatted with them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's the first time that I've ever said exactly correctly.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's usually exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, I say it with a G.
Yeah, I think we all do, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the exact reason, because
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be viewed as some dummy.
But then the pitfall there is that you can try to sound smart.
You
sound even dumber, right? It's kind of like someone who's really talented at something doesn't have to tell you they're really talented at it.
Right.
If you're really intelligent, like Ken Jennings is one of the raddest people I've ever met in person.
He seems like the super, super nice
so
guy.
So nice. And literally, his brain, if you compared it to any other brain in the world, potentially, mm-hmm. I think it could go. Maybe Stephen Hawking might give him a run for his money. He's just an incredibly smart person and so quick and funny. But it was like I was just talking to someone who was my peer, even though intellectually we are not even close to being peers.
Right,
he doesn't have to show off to show you how smart he is.
Sure.
And I think that that's really great. And that can be the danger if you're interviewing someone smart and you want to sound smart. You end up being the opposite of Ken Jennings. And by you, I mean me, because I've done it lots of times.
I have so much to learn. I have so much to learn. Let's do this. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk to you about how you got involved with all this stuff. So are you, where are you from originally?
Riverside, California.
Okay. You're a Cali girl.
Yeah. It's kind of the armpit of Southern California. Love you, Riverside.
How far down is it?
It's inland from Los Angeles.
Okay, so
it's
so
about
desert.
It's kind of desert. It's sort of known for its smog. would be the defining. It's a big city. I mean, it's not a small place. It's a big city. Okay. It's in the Inland Empire. So if you ever watched the OC, you know everyone makes fun of it. Industrial to a way. I mean, there's a I went to the University of California, Riverside there. So there's a big university. It's right next to San Bernardino, if you've ever heard of San Berdu, as it's called there. So yeah, born and raised there and sort of never fit in Southern California. So I didn't feel very tied to it, especially after I graduated from college. So then I went
born and raised. Okay. I think you just said that.
Yeah. And graduated from UC Riverside. And then I went to Boston for grad school just to kind of have a completely different experience. But I always
You were one of those kids. You wanted to get out.
I wanted to get out and
go
out.
Experience something totally different.
Yes. But I always knew that I wanted, well, in high school, initially, I just wanted to be a print journalist. So I was like editor of the paper and stuff like that. And then during high school, I got to do a little TV thing for like the school district. It's mortifying in retrospect. If anybody has tapes, please burn them. But that was where I learned. I mean, I didn't really know anything about broadcasting and I didn't want to be on TV per se. I just learned, oh, instead of just writing a story, you can use sound and video and these other things to help tell a story. And when I realized that and started doing that, I thought that was super cool. And that's when I wanted to go into broadcast journalism. So I kind of always knew that I wanted to do that. And so I got my undergrad degree in poli sci because I was going to be a White House correspondent, don't you know?
That was the dream.
Yeah, sure did not.
Why
live up
were
to
you
that.
Interested in politics?
Oh yeah, my dad was a history and political science teacher, junior college teacher, and so I grew up watching C-SPAN, like super nerdy. I mean, I was like 10 and knew everyone who was running for president on the Democratic ticket.
Wait! You grew up watching C-SPAN?
Yeah.
That is not a normal thing to say. For people.
No. And I did. And it was, and my parents wouldn't let me watch regular TV. So I've like never seen Three's Company.
No, you may not
but
watch
I
Three's Company.
But I totally knew Jesse Jackson's platform in 1984.
What did your mother do?
She worked in various jobs, but ended up working for UC Riverside with foreign exchange students who would come to the university and
teaching
helping
English
them.
Or helping
No, just
them...
helping them assimilate, getting their classes, things like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you wanted to be
I wanted to be a White House correspondent. So then I went and I still when I went to graduate school, I still thought that was going to happen. I just wanted to get I thought maybe someday I'd want to be a professor. So I wanted to get that master's degree.
Still in Boston?
In Boston for grad school and did my thesis on like national political conventions and the advent of broadcast journalism and how it changed platforms and what was actually done. No more backroom politicking. Now it's all for the camera, whatever.
Yeah.
Then I started.
Were you ever nervous like going on camera though?
Did
that ever bother you?
Oh, 100%. Because that wasn't that. I know it sounds so dumb because obviously if you do a job like this, there's something in you that enjoys that part of it. But that wasn't what I really liked about it. I really liked getting to see things and interview people that I wouldn't otherwise. Getting to write because it's people don't think about it, but writing is a really big fundamental part of what we do. So I loved writing the story, but you're just using sound bites and music and natural sound or whatever you have to help tell the story.
Sure.
They're like part of your words.
Right.
So I loved that whole part of it. But doing the on-camera thing was that took me a long time to get to a point where I felt not like a total basket case every time.
Walk me through the first time that you were on camera.
Like in real life?
Yeah.
It was in Yakima, Washington, where I got my first job. And gosh, I don't remember the very first story I ever did. Isn't that terrible?
Is that KVOS?
No, that was in Bellingham, I think.
Okay.
I was
at
KNDO. KNDO. In Yakima, which is where I met my husband and some of my best friends. It was a really great
experience.
Well,
that's where Rob's from,
too? Well, he is from Cedro Woolley.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
But that's where we met. We both got our first jobs in Yakima. Started like 2 weeks apart. Yeah. So I don't remember the very first time that I was on camera.
How can you not remember that?
I don't know.
That seems like it would be like a super stressful thing.
Well, I feel like maybe they started us off small. Like maybe the first time I did it, I wasn't live. You know, it was on tape. And so that's a little bit easier. I mean, I definitely remember some of the stories that I did there. But in terms of the live television, I can tell you some of the mess ups. I mean, I said on live television in Yakima, I was covering some crime. That was a big thing that we covered there. And I was technically paraphrasing what police had said, but I said, and I quote, "Police say the suspect is probably definitely driving a red car. Probably definitely." So I'm glad I didn't become a White House correspondent, obviously. So should the rest of the country should feel the same way. Yeah, it takes time to get comfortable on camera and not be a jackass. And frankly, I still am. I mean, there are so many times that I still am.
Yeah.
But you know what is different that has changed is that, you know, kids these days, but my kids and generations.
Go out into the backyard and yell at some clouds with me a little bit.
Get off my lawn. They watch YouTube now.
Right.
And part of the reason they watch YouTube is because it is very unfiltered most of the time, unplanned. I mean, some of the successful people know how to just make it look that way, mm-hmm. but they sniff out inauthenticity anymore. And so all the stuff that I learned when I first got into TV about, you know, be very clear in your speaking voice and all this other stuff, that is almost going against what I think the future holds for people in this field. They want the stuff that feels unpracticed and unscripted.
Well, I mean, that maybe. I think that is used when people are watching or kids are tapping into YouTube to watch like news reports and stuff. I mean, I would say most of that's used to laugh at it.
True. I'm just saying in general, like, because they're not even watching the news on TV anymore, right?
Well, sure, yeah.
You know, they're going to, they want these other sources for whatever they're going to tune into. And so I think that, and I don't know
how. Oh, I see what you're saying. Like the podcasting equivalent of,
yes.
of a news show.
Exactly. The sensibilities
like
are changing. And that right. I certainly do not think that we should get rid of any traditional journalism. In fact, I think it's kind of scary to think that only citizen journalism will exist in the future. But I do think that there are all of these changes in terms of what is sort of like watchable on TV and what people really like. And honestly, I think Evening is an example of that, because when we revamped the show, ratings completely changed, and part of what we did was make it just more conversational, less scripted, mm-hmm. more fun, and then people started watching again, and it was really interesting to see that happen.
Yeah.
Because that was really the biggest fundamental change that we made.
Right, right. So you start off, you get your first job in Yakima.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Oh, 1997.
Okay.
So, you know, the wheel had just been invented.
Yeah.
That was right out of graduate school. I did a road trip to get my first job and just kind of like begged everywhere that I stopped for a job. And that was the last place I stopped.
Wait,
and they had
minute.
One.
That's how you did that?
Mm-hmm. I started in Palm Springs and just drove north.
What?
Yeah.
And you just went to from like
small markets. All
yeah.
Small
newsroom
markets.
To newsroom.
Yeah. Yep.
Just saying, hey.
Hey, here's my tape. Hire me.
Kind demo
of,
tape.
Yeah, kind of pimping myself, I guess, but
wow.
ultimately it worked.
Wow.
I got an amazing job making $7 an hour.
In Yakima.
That was sort of the going rate. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
And in a market like that too, you're doing your own makeup, you're doing everything
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, well, I still
right?
do all that, but yeah.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, you shoot your own video, mm-hmm. edit it. We like engineer our own live shots sometimes. Yeah,
really?
You do it all yourself. But everyone's doing it all themselves. So
okay.
it was almost like an extension of college. It was actually really fun.
See, I know nothing about that world. Like,
yeah.
It seems like they're, you know, when I think about it, even with local news, like there's a team of like 80 people.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
In the van.
Incredible. Yeah.
With Jeff Renner. You know, like.
He's always in the van. Even when he's in the studio, he's in the van.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay, so that's amazing to me that you just went on a road trip and found a job.
Yep.
That does not happen anymore, I guarantee it.
Yeah, maybe not. And I got lucky.
You
know, I think that it was right place, right time. But yeah, you kind of got to, I mean, I guess it's like anything. If you really, really are obsessed with something, you go after it. And this is what I wanted to be when I grow up. So
uh-huh.
I just, did what it took.
Yeah, you took it by the reins. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
So how long were you in Yakima before coming over to Seattle?
Oh, forever.
Was the next step?
No. Oh, heck no.
No.
So we were in, and I say we because my husband Rob was with me
right.
all of this journey. So we were in Yakima I was there for a year and a half. Then I went to Boise, Idaho.
Went east.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that city has got it going on. So fun. Like you wouldn't think, oh, it was such a great place to live. So we were there for a couple of years, and then Vegas for two and a half years.
I never knew this.
Yeah. Wouldn't recommend living there. But
tell me about living in Vegas for a little bit.
It's like
that's got to be just insane.
Because
as soon as you walk off of the strip.
Right. It's not
cute. It's what I've experienced with our mutual friend Luke.
Yeah.
Like I went there for the first time with Luke and Kevin Dodrell,
yeah.
who I think you know as well. And I was amazed to find, like, as soon as you walk off the strip, not only does, like, you know, the streets are almost like to the point of being unpaved and just gravel. And drunks and druggies, you know, are just like right there, you know, all over the place. And then all, you can look up on like some of the nicer casinos and they're not even like, like they're not even nice on that side.
No, it's almost like a Hollywood facade.
It is.
Like you walk down the street and it looks like you, New York, but you go around the back and it's just like on stilts.
Yeah, it's just a saloon.
Yeah.
It's just a front of a saloon.
Swinging doors. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Here's what I will say about Vegas. It wasn't for us.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of friends who still live there and they love it. They love, because you can be part of that scene. You can go to openings of properties and, you know, lots of famous people go there and stuff. But I just never knew how to behave in that world. I don't go to clubs. Like that wasn't me. And so,
I just can't control myself.
Yeah. Oh, you
that's
can't.
That's the problem.
If you lived there, you could, because you would see that the house, let me tell you here, listen, kids, here's the one piece of advice I'll give you. The house literally always wins. Otherwise there wouldn't be a house.
Right.
So when you live there and you see like, because they have to release these financial reports every quarter, and you see how much money they're raking in from, like, you think it's the big whales that come in playing poker and that's where they make their money?
Oh, sure. No, not
like
at all.
Nickel slots. They're making all their money from the people that shouldn't be spending it in the first place.
Yeah.
So it kind of kills, because I used to love going there. When I was growing up, it was like a 3.5 hour drive from Riverside. So we would go there and for the weekend, and it was a blast. But when you live there, at least for me, all of that lost its luster.
So like, was it depressing?
A little, it's a little soul crushing to like want to go see a movie, but you have to walk through the casino and get all smoky just to go see a movie. Or you go to the grocery store and there's people playing slot machines in the grocery store. It was just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of sad. But on the other hand, we made some of the best friends that we'll have for the rest of our life there.
Well, that's
so
good.
Yeah, so that was the upside.
Yeah, you could be sad with other people.
Exactly. And I was still reporting in news at that point, and Vegas is crazy with news. So it was great for a job.
I would imagine that there's a fair amount of crime.
A lot of crime.
In that city.
And
just from, you know, watching CSI and things like that.
Yes, well, exactly. It's pretty much like CSI. All the time. Dismembered bodies all over the place. That actually was a story that I covered, but just one time.
What?
It doesn't happen often. Yeah.
Did you see it?
No, thank gosh.
Yeah.
Did I say thank gosh?
You did.
Why am I watching my language with you? It's the one time I probably don't need to.
Yeah, you don't really.
Yeah, all right, I won't from here on out. Thank God.
So from Vegas, where do you go next?
And then Phoenix.
We just kept heading
south.
You guys just, like you were doing the whole
desert
thing, man.
Yeah, setting your face aflame
big
by going outside
cactus?
Every day.
Are you a big fan of cactus?
No, not even remotely. But they were good jobs. You know, at that point, we were kind of working for the careers. And my husband was an anchor, and he kept getting really good jobs. So I would just follow him to the next market.
And you're used to the heat.
Yeah, except I was, that is misery in Phoenix in the summer. It's like 117 degrees outside, and you've got to do a live shot, and your makeup melts off your face.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't great. But again, Phoenix, lots of amazing friends made there.
Sure,
it was a really
sure.
nice place to live. But my husband was from here. My best friend who I grew up with lives here now. So it was always a goal to get back here. So that's, and this is where, you know, we want to stay and raise our kids here. I mean, I just don't think there's any place better than Seattle or the Pacific Northwest.
So how long have you been here then?
We've been here now for like 9 years,
eight and a half, 9 years.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was longer than that.
Yeah.
Excuse me. This Ricola is not working.
Because you didn't sing the song that goes with it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot my whatever
flugelhorn.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I don't know. Matterhorn?
You know, the Matterhorn.
Is that a Matterhorn? Probably not.
I think the Matterhorn's actually a mountain.
Yeah, someone German's going to be very disappointed.
Or a ride at Disney, right? So you come up here after Phoenix.
Yes.
What are your first impressions of Washington?
I loved it. I mean, because
you had been here before.
Yeah, because I'd lived in Yakima. I definitely knew about Seattle and about King 5. So getting the job at King was really a blessing. And I was
now,
still
working.
Now,
was that for the actual, like, the news, or was it for evening?
It was for the news. So I was still covering
news.
Right. Yeah,
news.
General assignment reporting. And then evening was like the other. In the same way that I felt lucky that I got my first job on a road trip, evening was just a huge like surprise and timing. And that's why I think I got the job, because a reporter, I mean, reporters never left that show, but one of them did at the same time that I was available. And so they had me fill in for a little bit, and then that was that. And I was able to leave news entirely and just do evening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. And for people who don't know, evening, when it started out, Evening Magazine,
yeah,
has been on the air here in the Northwest for what?
20.
I want to say like 25, 27.
Oh, longer. Yeah, I would say it's 28 now, maybe.
Really?
A long time. And it's the last one in the country. They used to be in every major market, and now this is it.
Was it all Evening Magazine? That was
sometimes
like...
they were called PM Magazine, okay, but it was essentially the same, you know, formula.
Really? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was like it was almost like a syndicated thing, but just with your local.
Yeah, there was
talent.
A national office. Okay. Exactly. And so they would share resources, like they, you know, every story that every local market did would go to this national office so those could air elsewhere, but you had local hosts and local programming involved.
Oh.
And then over time that went away and Evening Magazine was just a King Seattle Pacific
right.
Northwest thing.
No shit.
Yeah.
So that's where all that stock footage came from.
Yes. I mean, we have, that is some of the stuff that we have is so outrageous. Like their packages, the package is a story, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Their stories used to be like 7 minutes long. You know, I mean, no one, like everyone has ADD now. No one could watch these stories anymore, but they have like incredible footage that's like 29, 30 years old. You know, it's pretty cool.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Kim Holcomb of Evening.
Not I magazine.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Be right back.
But the older I get, the more it feels like the American West. Something empty and clean. As an egg, now filled with great mountainous things that I've made, like friends I've let hang in the wind. Hear them rattle on each other. Wish I had an older brother to intone some night music that gets in my bow, bow, bow. Every trace of the places I have known, no, no, no. Yep. Some days I feel like a well-received. Some days I guess I just won't leave. One day an acre of trees, then a little wicker wreath. If you strove in between, you see no change. Not the same. One could argue there's some growth in decay, but that's a cruel way to be kind. A lover for the weak of mind. To
so you've been on the show for
to the vacuum of being
pretty much 9 years
almost.
Since you guys moved up here. Well, almost.
Yeah, I think like 8 years. I worked
okay.
in news for about a year, I think, before.
So was that your first experience doing like these interviews and
yeah,
press junkets
for sure.
And stuff?
Yeah, I'd never done anything like that before. And the first time I did it was complete baptism by fire, because it wasn't just some like small indie or something. They sent me, it was one weekend, and it was Wolverine and Star Trek, the first one, the reboot, the J.J. Abrams.
So you were interviewed.
So I was like, holy shit, my first interview is Hugh Jackman? Okay, that's great. Let's just jump in. Although, in retrospect, that was the perfect person to interview because he is the nicest and he's a total
super,
pro.
Super, super nice guy.
So easy. I mean, literally, people that come out of his room and feel all proud of themselves for a great interview, it's him. It's not us. He just is, he's so charming and like gracious. So yeah, that was my very first weekend doing it. And then it just kind of went from there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And were you nervous going into that one? It sounds like you were a little bit.
Well, and part of it is because I hate, you know how we were talking about when you interview someone who's really smart, you don't want to look stupid.
I hate feeling
stupid in general, which is unfortunate because it's a kind of constant
thing. Happens a lot,
thing.
Kim.
Happens often. But I hate being in a situation where I don't exactly know how things work. And these junkets are very different from real life. You know, you're in a hotel to do the interviews. And if there are multiple people you're interviewing, there are multiple rooms. And so you just kind of wait in the hallway until they call your name to go into a room. And so it almost feels like you're waiting for the principal, like sitting outside the principal's office. And then you go in and it's not just the person you're interviewing. You know, there are people running cameras, obviously, but there's like usually their publicist is sitting around somewhere and maybe some other people and you don't know who they are or why they're there. They're just there. And you know they're listening to you do the interview. And that's really embarrassing because you're like, God, now I really don't want to screw this up because these other people I don't know are listening. And then there's a person sitting there timing you and giving you cues like you have 2 minutes left. You have 1 minute, 1 minute left. Wrap it up. And if you don't wrap it up,
they just cut you off.
Yeah, they'll cut you off. Or, you know, it's sort of like persona non grata after that. Because if you're going to go back, you don't want to be that person who like doesn't follow the time cues. So it's kind of a weird experience. And because I had never done it before, knowing how to behave in those situations and getting a usable interview with like Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds was on that one and looking at him is like staring at the sun. So to like get usable stuff with these guys while all this other stuff is going on was very weird. But you know, it's like anything, you just kind of get used to it over time. But I think also that because I don't do it, there are some people that do this like every weekend for every movie that comes up.
Right.
And I don't, and I don't have to, which is great because I'm married and have kids and I don't want to, you know, I have a life here and that's more important to me. But because I still get to do it every couple of months, I never take it for granted because I'm like, this is so great. Look at this person that
like,
I get
it
to
seems
meet.
Like you do quite a few of those.
Yeah.
I pop on Evening Magazine from time to time or Evening. and we watch it like we sat down and watched it with my daughter Tatum the other night and told her that you were coming over and she was super excited.
She's a pumpkin, by the way.
Isn't she a cutie?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, man. Pretty fond of her.
She's a keeper?
Right now, anyway.
Wait till she's 13.
Oh, God.
We'll do another podcast then.
God. Yeah, will you come back on? Give me some tips. It seems like it. Do you just have like a whole backlog of these things, or I mean,
no,
they
we
seem pretty current.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you do the movie. Typically, it's like 2 weeks before it comes out is when we'll go cover it.
Yeah.
But we switch off a little bit. So one of my coworkers just went and did the Entourage movie I had other stuff going on that weekend. So we kind of, you know, I'm not the only one who does it for sure. Other people with Evening do it.
Oh,
too.
Sure, totally. Now the press junkets have been in the news. Press junkets themselves have been in the news lately.
Okay.
Because of like a couple of screw-ups.
Oh,
There's this Australian guy.
Yeah. Right? The Robert Downey Jr. thing.
Right.
Yeah.
That pissed off Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
During the Avengers Age of Ultron junket.
Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on something like that? Because you're a pro. You do these.
Well, okay. I mean, first of all, I'm surprised that he even got the tapes of it because they are shooting... There are photographers that are there. They're shooting for you, and then you just get them when you leave.
Yeah.
So I was surprised that those were even released because it was so awkward and uncomfortable and such a terrible interview.
Maybe it was one of the camera guys or something, huh?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, and like they say, all publicity is good publicity. So, you know, I don't know what the circumstances were around that, but that's certainly, I mean, it's if it was real, and let's assume that it was. It was so stupid. I mean, don't do an interview like that. You're not Barbara Walters. You've got 4 minutes with this guy. Don't start talking to him about his past. You're there to talk about the movie. And if you can bring up something else, I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. Like, I want to talk to them about the movie, but I want to see how it relates to their real lives in some way.
Sure.
I feel like that's fair game for the most part. But when you start bringing up stuff that has nothing to do with anything, just so that you can look like you're some investigative reporter on a movie junket, that's not, those two things do not go together.
Right.
This is entertainment.
That's not what that's for.
It's not what it's for. And people are going to watch stuff like this because they want some joy in their lives, not because they want to get to the bottom of something. And who wants to get to the bottom of something with a celebrity? Like, gross. That's so stupid. Like, there are much more important things to worry about in the world than like how Robert Downey Jr. feels about his dad. So
I think most
everybody that would do these interviews would never take it that direction because it's pointless and he'll never get asked back. And you know, I just think that it was kind of a pointless exercise.
Yeah. I know, excuse me, that Scott Cardi had basically the same thing to say about that.
Yeah, I mean,
too. You know, and it was interesting, too, because I didn't really know how to think of it because I'm not really in that world. And, you know, I was like, well, it's kind of a valid question. He's a star and, he can expect
to
be that. But yeah, it is. Right. It's that's not the venue for it.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess I just look at it like, you know, there are a lot of things on this earth right now that we need to be concerned about.
Right.
And that if I had become a White House correspondent, I would be focused on those things and trying to get to the bottom of them. What I do and what people, you know, what we do at Evening in general, which is not just entertainment, you know, just doing nice, happy, fun stories that make people feel good. That is the point of what we're doing. There doesn't need to be anything deeper than that. And that's okay. There's still something valid about that because consumers want that too. If they're watching something that's entertainment oriented, they're watching it because they want to be entertained. If they're watching,
and especially in times like this too, where there's so much bad news. I mean, frankly, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I do not watch the news anymore because it depresses the hell out of me.
I know.
And nor does my wife. We took the TV out of the house. This is the only TV in the house now, right? So, like, we don't do it anymore because it is depressing and it scares you with all the bad news that is going on.
Especially, I think, when you become a parent. That is where it changed for me because I was still reporting on stuff and I started projecting. At that point, we had our son and I was projecting him into every story that I did and it was terrible. And I do think you get to a point where it is hard to every day see all of the things that are wrong with the world, you know, especially on a microcosmic level when it's in your, you know, down the street from your house. Right. We should all be informed. But it does get to be, it can be kind of soul crushing after a while to constantly.
And speak a little bit more on that a little bit, because you were doing the news here in Seattle, major metropolitan area. You did it in Vegas. Like, I guess you probably didn't have your son yet in Vegas.
No, I didn't. I had him about 10 months before we moved here. And when I was in Phoenix, I was doing some feature reporting too. So it wasn't... When I had him, I was doing kind of lighter stuff. And then when I came here, I was doing just general reporting. And there were two things that I had to report on that were really, really hard for me. One was the Zena Linick case, who was a little girl who was abducted behind her house in Tacoma.
I remember that.
Awful. And the guy, Terapon Adhan, the suspect who was convicted of the crime, turned out to be a serial rapist and attacker. And it was awful. And that's like a parent's worst fear is stranger danger, which doesn't happen that often, but it did happen. So that was terrifying. And then...
Yeah, and being a reporter in that situation, you're like getting all of the gory details.
Yes. And the one that is the worst for me is the one that they just adjudicated with the guy. He was just sentenced, the Covington murders, where it was the daughter and her boyfriend who...
Haven't been paying attention.
This was like 8 years ago now.
Okay,
is how long it's taken to go to trial. But it was Christmas Eve.
I remember.
Her parents, her brother,
killed
his wife,
whole family.
And two little kids.
Yeah.
Gone. And I read the probable cause documents for that, which is where they, you know, police basically indicate everything that they've learned, all the evidence that they have, which of course later needs to be tried in court. But reading the probable cause documents, it was like one of the worst things that I could never unknow. Mm-hmm. And it was two children were involved, two little kids the night before Christmas. And it was just awful. And that's why I feel so fortunate. I mean, I know my job won't last forever. Nothing good lasts forever probably, but I feel grateful and fortunate every day that I get to do this instead, because I still get to tell stories and do all the stuff that I wanted to do in the first place. But now when I knock on someone's door, they're like typically happy to see me because they know I'm to be there for a good reason and not there to ask them, how do you feel about this terrible tragedy that happened, which needs to be done. I mean, I'm not trying to impugn like anyone who reports on news, because those are such critical jobs, arguably way more critical than what I do. But for my own sanity, it was really nice to be able to take a turn and do something else. And then doing these interviews, I never knew that I could do stuff like that, or that was, I don't know if I would call it a skill, because I think anybody can talk to somebody else, but I didn't know that was something that I could ever do.
Don't sell yourself short. I mean, there's definitely an art to doing that.
Yeah, well.
You know, I've had to learn. I mean, I'm not saying what I do is, you know, some kind of rocket science and or like I'm making a I'm not comparing it to Van Gogh. But you know, I've had to learn how to talk to people like yourself.
Yeah.
In a candid and comfortable manner. And it's definitely taken some, you know, some time to get used to. I mean, I still have really bad ones too.
Yeah.
You know? Just earlier last week, for example.
Really?
Oh yeah, ma'am. Yeah. I messed up.
Oh.
I messed up big time. I asked a question that I probably shouldn't have.
Ooh. Was there an awkward silence?
There was more of a very awkward and stern look, and then a slightly annoyed and perturbed response.
Oof, those are the worst.
I know.
We've all done it.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. Does it still happen to you too?
Sure it does.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just cut it out.
Cut it out. No one ever knows. Erase it from the record.
That's right,
it's all
man.
Better.
Oh my God. Oh my God. There's got to be, I mean, you've done, how many interviews do you think you've done in your life?
Like celebrity interviews?
No, just interviews.
Oh, hundreds. I mean, thousands. You know, because any story you go out on, you're reporting on, you're interviewing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's a person on the street or if it's, you know, an actor in a room. It's
Does
still
it
an interview.
Ever get easier? No matter who they are, person, you know, just regular person on the street or celebrity, if you mess something up in an interview, does it ever get easier? Do you get over that quicker?
Well, I think it depends on who you are as a person. For me,
sure.
No, because I can't. I hate myself forever. I still remember stupid things I said as a kid.
Oh,
man. You never get over
that
stuff.
I remember each one.
Yeah. I mean, I literally remember being at dinner with my parents.
Yeah.
And with other adults, because I was an only child, so I was always in these positions where I was around adults. And someone was talking about something. I don't even remember what they were talking about. And I probably at the time didn't even know what they were talking about. But I wanted to, you know, chime in with something. And so I said something to the effect of, yeah, that's what you think. Nothing. Crickets. Literally, it was like the record scratched and everyone looked at me. In the grand scheme of things, not a big deal. Right. Still, I'm like filled with shame thinking about that now.
There are moments in my life where I will be either laying in bed, watching a television show, whatever. Driving down the street, and a little cloud will form in my temple, and I will think of something that I did that was awkward.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Like in high school, to get attention, one time I headbutted a locker to get my friend's attention, and got a lot of weird looks. I was like, "What? Why would you just do that? Like, did that hurt? Do you need to go to the doctor?" You know?
Yeah.
And I just remember that. I was like, it was supposed to be funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I guarantee when I listen to this later.
Like a little worm.
When I listen to this later, I'm going to be like, okay, first of all, Holcomb, stop laughing because you sound like a complete asshole when you laugh. Secondly, you're not funny. So why are you trying to be?
Why are you telling me? People need to follow you on Twitter because you are hilarious.
You know, I haven't been getting a lot of response lately. I feel like I'm tweeting into the void.
Oh,
like
man.
Maybe 9 likes per tweet.
Ugh.
In the grant, the ratio is not, it's off based on the number of followers.
I get
and the
one
likes per
retweet
tweet.
A year.
On Christmas.
On Christmas. And it's a pity retweet.
That is untrue. Oh my God.
Yeah, but like little mind worms. I'm totally mm-hmm. with you on this. I it happens all the time, and I'll just remember something from my childhood, like mooning somebody when I jumped into the Puget Sound.
Now here's the question though. Would you ever now smash your head against a locker?
Hell no.
Would you moon someone jumping into the Puget Sound?
Did it yesterday.
So I would say then on a scale of 1 to 100, you're about 50-50 in terms of learning curve. So I think it's okay for those worms to exist if we like are thinking back on something and realizing we really did screw it up and then we don't do it again. But
That's
if
true.
We just like keep going over and feeling the shame, like recycling the shame and then either repeating that behavior or like not ever thinking I need to change it, then it's wasted energy. So when I feel the shame, like I've never again at a dinner party said, yeah, that's what you think. I haven't repeated it. I'm pretty proud of myself for that.
That's really great. That's really great. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I can still feel the shame, but at least I've learned from it. So it's not totally wasted energy feeling the shame.
Yeah. Yeah. You just turned a funny topic into like a serious anecdote.
Yes. I'm going to write a self-help book. Yeah, that's what you think. That's going to be the title. A memoir.
Other failed... other failures.
Other non-starters.
So you've been doing this for 9 years? Are you still happy doing it?
Yeah. I love my job. I love the people that I work with a lot. So that makes it a lot easier. And I have... By virtue of this job, I have literally fulfilled dreams, which I know sounds so stupid and they're pretty shallow dreams, but they were mine and I have now been able to live them. And so I can't, you know, I can't ever, even if it ended tomorrow, I would feel so happy that I got this amount of time to do it because I have like dreams have come true on this job.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And you get and you have enough time to like spend with your family and
I do. And yeah, like the schedule is pretty manageable and you know, the kids get some opportunities to like see and do things that they might not otherwise. So it's been great. Yeah.
Yeah. And that sweet Lamborghini Diablo that you drove up in.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to talk about how much money I make.
The Countach.
Couple mil a year. Here's another piece of advice, kids. Don't get into local broadcasting for the money. Do it because you love it. Or podcasting.
Do not enter podcasting for those sweet, sweet ducats. Do the people even say that anymore?
Do people say Countach anymore? Is that even a thing anymore?
Probably not.
No. I do remember that from growing up, though. That was like the thing that was like what you aspire to.
You know what? I finally saw Sir Mix-a-Lot driving a Lamborghini on the 520 bridge.
Really?
Yeah, it was about a year ago.
That's a moment.
Finally saw it. Like, I knew it was going to happen someday.
Yeah.
And it finally happened, and it was a lime green and black Lamborghini, like brand new. Amazing.
Did he go to Dick's? Did you follow him to Dick's for a burger?
I was on the bus.
Oh.
I was taking the bus.
To tell the driver, that's Mix.
Follow that Lamborghini.
Follow that sir.
Follow that sir. Yeah, that's right. Well, Kim, this has been a lot of fun talking with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It was very fun. I like your setup here. It's nice.
Isn't it nice? You like these nice IKEA tables?
It is nice. I don't have a coaster. Is this okay? My iced coffee is dribbling all over the place.
You will be required to clean the water rings before you leave.
I need those again.
Wasn't that a lovely chat, folks? Isn't that lovely? Of course. Kim Holcomb, man. She is just an absolute pleasure to talk with every time I run into her. And it was awesome to have her on the show, finally. Okay. Ah, man. Still FOMOing over here. Is that what you make a fear of missing outing? Yeah. I'm fear of missing outing right now, guys. Actually, the fear is already there. Hey, thanks for listening this week. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Just takes a couple seconds just to add a little star rating right there. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps. So you can access the archives there, or you can visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to the RSS feed, and you can just tap the archives tab at the top of the page and go listen to all 250 episodes with people like Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, Chris Walla of Death Cab for Cutie, Scott Aukerman, famous comedian, Mike Birbiglia, Aisha Tyler, Taco Cat, the list goes on and on, folks, Sebado. Yeah, man, it's all there for your listening pleasure. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet, or you can email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. You can also call the voicemail line. It's there as well. And remember to take the pledge. Pledge to tell somebody about the show. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your father, your brother. We'll even take your cousins, folks. Sign them up while they're not looking. That's a great idea. Here's your inspirational quote of the week as said by a 4-year-old.
Daddy, you really missed out on Sasquatch this year. Why didn't you do go?
Great. Now my daughter's in on it too. She knows. She knows me. She knows I'm FOMOing, missing out on Sasquatch. Thank you so much for listening this week, everyone. We'll be back next week, next Monday, with an all-new all new episode of the Air Raid podcast for you. All right, let's see. Let's go out today with another Cataldo song. Let's see. Let's do this one. Let's do Good Religion. Good Religion by Cataldo. We'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good one.
I attribute more meaning to than I'm meaning to. And in this wicked place, your greatness crashes over me like waves into broken glass on the beach and washed up, wrapped in a cast off divinity. It's you. Tripped on them as something cruel. Mark, I'm quite picky to claim they're not so luminous, because you've touched its skin and kicked up some dust. Well, the path in light isn't hard to trust when I'm with you.
Oh no, Cam's is eating my prime rib. That's gone. Anyways, there's some Twister happening around me. Adults playing Twister. There's moose knuckling and machines. And really, you know what I call it? Sunday. Sunday in a nut. We'll raid the air with you soon. Love you. Always and forever.